you are, Jenny.
I'd like to call the House Committee on Human Services to order. Good Monday morning, everybody, on this Monday, May 16, 2011. We have three bills we'd like to hear this morning, and so we're just going to go right through in order, which is a little rare for me, but we're going to do them in order. So I would like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 238A. And Jennifer, would you get us started by giving us the summary?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 238A requires the Oregon Health Authority to review rules relating to patient data and information provided to OHA by mental health and addiction treatment providers and determine if excessive requirements and redundancies can be eliminated and the process streamlined. It requires OHA to adopt standardized forms, requires the department to appoint a work group to advise them in the review and development of the rules and forms. It defines the membership of the work groups. It requires the department to adopt or amend rules or forms no later than January 1st, 2012. And it requires OHA to report to the Legislative Assembly on the effectiveness of the rules adopted or amended. Declares an emergency. We do have a no revenue impact statement and a no fiscal impact statement on this bill. It passed out of the Senate Health Care, Human Services, and Rural Health Policy Committee unanimously and passed out of the Senate floor 29-1.
Thank you, Jennifer. Mm-hmm. Two individuals have signed up to testify, and I'd like to invite them forward, Richard Harris and Andy Smith. Apparently, Jonathan Eames wants to as well. So if all three, since there's room, would come forward. Now, I have to ask you to get along. I know that you're all pretty contentious about this, but if you'll identify for the record, we will begin.
Good morning. My name is Richard Harris. I'm the Director of Addictions and Mental Health in the Oregon Health Authority, and I'm here to talk about 238 and fully in support of this measure. For a long time, the mental health and addiction system information that we gather from our programs has been dependent upon a system that was designed in the mid-70s and has been operational ever since. And even though it has served well, its time has basically run out. And it's one of the elements in modernizing the way we manage information and data from the over 400 providers and counties in the state when they're providing addiction and mental health services. So in the past, we have attempted to modernize all of the elements around it, but it's created in many ways a level of burden in reporting that really is unnecessary. I'm not saying this is the only part of the mental health and addiction system that needs to be modernized and to reduce, where possible, administrative barriers, but it's an important element. And we have, over the last year, begun to develop a new system that's based on a web access data system. It's being piloted at a number of counties around the state, and it's our intention over the next year to implement this fully across the state using resources that we have available to us, all in existing resource base. It's a system that will allow us to interact with the various providers using the systems that they already have in place or will be developing with the MTM system. So you may have heard last week about that provider-based data system, and the system that we're looking at would in fact interact and draw data based on those programs. It's also important that we standardize the data elements in such a way that you can get the same data from all parts of the state for all parts of the mental health and drug and alcohol system. So we support 238. We think it'll bring a focus on making the administrative improvements that are really necessary in all of health transformation. As we go forward, we, as with the larger health care reforms that we're about to embark upon, making it a more efficient administrative process is definitely one of the goals for all of us. And in AMH, we abide by the same philosophy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Andy Smith. I'm the legislative liaison for the Association of Community Mental Health Programs, and we represent Oregon's 36 counties, 9 mental health organizations, and 1 tribe in Oregon on behalf of community mental health. And this morning, I'd like to testify very much in support of House Bill 238. And two things that I would highlight. One would be the partnership that we've had with the legislature and the agency in terms of this bill and getting to a version that we're really pleased with, that it will move forward and as was shared this morning, pass the Senate floor, I believe, with a 29 to 1 vote. But second, I would like to emphasize, and I think this is a follow-up from last Wednesday when Scott Lloyd was before you, that much of the work that we're doing with them is very much consistent with this in terms of standardizing forms and reducing no-show rates and really making better use of the resources we have so that the individuals served by these systems will benefit. So the last piece I would share is that we would, again, thank the agency and thank Senator Bates. This was originally his bill, and we were very grateful for his leadership on this front. So thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you. We'll have questions at the end. So, Jonathan, if you want to go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Jonathan Eames. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Prevention, Education, and Recovery Association, otherwise known as OPRA, the statewide association representing alcohol and drug treatment facilities as well as prevention advocates here in the state. And we also very much support Senate Bill 238. I echo what Mr. Smith here has said concerning the partnership and the work that has gone into this. It's not the original form that it came in, but through a lot of hard work, we came to a place where we can look at the interim and look at these administrative burdens. As you know, the margins are so darn slim in alcohol and drug treatment facilities for most of these non-for-profits that the administrative burden just adds another element of time that could be spent, you know, treating folks rather than filling out paperwork. And if we can come to a place where the state feels comfortable with the information that's being provided and we feel comfortable in the amount of time and effort that it takes to be able to produce those documents, we feel that this is a good compromise and a good place to start working on this. And hopefully by next legislative session, there will be some things that we can bring before you, and you'll see the hard work that folks put into this interim work group. So I really appreciate it. Thank you very much, and we definitely support Senate Bill 238.
Thank you. Colleagues, questions? Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Jonathan, maybe I'm just somewhat confused, but mm-hmm. It sounded like you were saying this was going to be create more of a burden administratively.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, no, quite the opposite. I'm currently not doing good this Monday morning communicating my position. No, I feel that this work group is actually to reduce the administrative burden. That's the whole point of the bill. Yes. So okay. I apologize.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Representative Harker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good goals. What's the coordination with EISPD?
Representative Harker, co-chairs, I'm not sure what the acronym stands for.
Sorry. It's the portion of DAS which houses the chief information officer of the state, Mr. Dugan Petty, yeah. And which is responsible for managing development and management of information systems across state agencies, which tend to make decisions within the agency. And thus, we have these silos of information that can't talk with one another all over the state.
Thank you. Right now, this is a program that we're piloting in a variety of communities around the state, and it's the system that we're looking to expand is based on a system developed in other states using a web-based management system, And this is one that's compatible with the movement to electronic medical records in the entire health authority. So it's a component of the larger system that's being managed through the, I want to say, Carol Robinson's outfit upstairs, and it's a compatible system, and it was, the whole idea was that we believe that this was necessary to move in this direction several years ago because of the problems with the CPMS system that I've made reference to. So right now we're working on the plan and how to implement it, and on a statewide basis. So we're using the infrastructure of the Oregon Health Authority to do this.
If I might, co-chairs, Representative Parker, one of the things that you have done in this committee, which we believe was fantastic, which was pass House Bill 3110, which is the Alcohol and Drug Policy Commission, and that approach is exactly what you're talking about, is looking across all agencies and looking at how coordination can happen. And that includes DAS and Department of Education and the corrections. And this is, while it's a separate bill, I think that A&D Policy Commission will help meet those goals of coordinating across and not being siloed and looking at this in a siloed form.
Many, 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 many follow-ups, but wow. I'll take them elsewhere, probably with Carol Robinson, and just encourage us to all try to remember that we have to have coordination of these structures that we're building. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to communicate. Just like we can't communicate now, we'll just be unable to communicate differently.
Thank you, Representative. And there's a reason that Chair Tomei doesn't allow acronyms. What's CPNS, Richard?
Chair Gillum, CPMS stands for Client Process Monitoring System.
MS.
Sorry for using that one.
It's all right.
I started it.
Yes, you did. Any other questions? If not, Richard, I wanted to ask you, this particular bill, notwithstanding your comment, Representative Harker, that we want coordination throughout the system, but this particular bill is coordinating mainly information or streamlining processes in your area of the department. That's correct, isn't it?
That's correct.
And it says here in the summary, it says determine if excessive requirements and redundancies, but the testimony is basically there are excessive requirements and redundancies. My question, I guess, is just could you say a little more about why we now find ourselves, after what you described to be a successful program, with excessive redundancies?
Co-Chair Gillum, members of the committee, the term excessive, of course, is an elastic term that in the eye of the beholder, some person's excessive is another person's moderate. I believe that over the years, we have layered various requirements, some from the legislature, some from the federal government, some from our office, and it's a matter of sorting through those requirements to see what are absolutely essential by statute that we have to meet. The other question to be answered in making whether an assessment about whether it's excessive or not is are we engaged in measuring and asking the right questions, because over the years we've just layered things on top, and what we need to do is sort through what are the essential questions to be answered in the new healthcare management system, where we're moving to measurement of outcomes as opposed to counting the number of services that are provided. We are going to have to make some pretty streamlined choices about how to do this. And I think now is the opportunity, the Oregon Health Authority, the health transformation as a part of that effort is going to have to look at all of these various requirements that are liberally laced throughout the whole healthcare system. So it isn't just addictions and mental health. This bill is specific to our area, but I think these same issues are pretty much across the board in the way we deliver services. And I think the whole intent here is to figure out a way to be more effective in our jobs, but also in making it possible for providers to spend more time delivering direct service and less time spent on things that may be not necessary.
Thank you.
Co-chairs Gilliam, co-chair Tomei, and members of the committee. One point I would add, I think visually what helps me summarize kind of one of the challenges here was the pie chart that Scott Lloyd had last week in terms of how our providers are spending their time. So what we really want to maximize is that slice that's direct service time. And what we saw is that nationally, all of across the country, we face the same challenge in many ways because of history isn't that different across the country than it is in Oregon. But one of the things that we're doing with that project, you may remember the no-show rate. In other words, if we lose somebody pretty quickly, we don't deliver those services pretty close to their first appearance to the, as they present to the system, that we lose them and then we end up chasing them as opposed to providing service. So that's just one example in terms of the real challenge here is to shift away from things that are not direct service and to direct service in order to maximize our resources.
And a goal would be that with a bill like this urging the department to get to find these excessive requirements and redundancies then would be to be able to get back to that client quicker. This would be, I'm sure, not the only reason we would get back quicker, but it might contribute to shorter times.
Representative Gilman, that's correct. And I don't know if I mentioned this, but the notion of very quick access, and in other words, oftentimes same-day access, is critical, and that's a piece of this in terms of, again, not having systems that are designed around chasing people, but really being responsive to them, and that is very important in terms of access.
Other questions, colleagues? Just a couple of quick questions before I let you guys go. It's particularly for Andy. We know Richard is for this. Jonathan was a little confused. He was for and against. You didn't sign up to be for or against, Andy. Are you trying to hide something or trick us in some way?
Representative, I was just late.
You were late.
Signing up. So we are strongly in support.
And now you've been on this side, Andy, and you've also been up here on this side. Can you tell us a little bit about what you prefer?
I'd rather be as far away of you as possible. As I'm quite honest.
And even though I can't believe you just said that.
Andy is now against
the
bill.
I want to return ickiness with kindness. And I just want to say that is a really sharp tie you wear. Anything else?
Oh, you've walked into that one.
Yeah. Thank you so much, gentlemen. With that, colleagues, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 238A. And I would like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 746A. And Jennifer, would you do us the honor again?
Certainly. Senate Bill 746A requires members of the Legislative Sensitive Review Committee to develop findings and conclusions and make recommendations to the Director of the Department of Human Services regarding policies and practices. It requires disclosure of the report upon request by any member of the Legislative Assembly unless otherwise exempted from the disclosure. It declares an emergency effective on passage. It has a no revenue or fiscal impact statement on this bill. It passed out of the Senate Health Care, Human Services, and Rural Health Policy Committee unanimously and passed off of the Senate floor unanimously.
Thank you, Jennifer. Absolutely no one has come to testify. Colleagues, do you have any questions or comments regarding this bill?
Mr. Chair. Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry, Representative Greenland.
I just have a note on the SMS, which says there were 13,306 incidents of abuse and neglect, and I'm not sure that's a correct statement. I think that may be reports or something.
Incidents, I guess the definition maybe of incidents is part of the problem here, maybe.
Well, this may be reports to the hotline. I mean, is this validated incidents?
It was information received from the Department of Human Services, so...
Yeah, is an incident a substantiated case, or is an incident meaning it could be everything arranged from reporting to substantiate? I don't know. We can ask the department for a clarification before we move the bill. Other comments?
I'd like somebody from the department to come up.
Chair Tomei, it's a good suggestion, and here they come.
Chair Tamay, Chair Gilliam, my name's Lois, and members of the committee, my name's Lois Day. I'm the administrator for the Office of Safety and Permanency for Children. Representative Green, like, I'm not certain what you're reading from. What I can give you is in 2010, we actually received 71,886 reports of abuse. Of those reports, 29,021 were referred for actual investigation, face-to-face contact, and we had 7,306 founded allegations of abuse of neglect, which involved 11,188 victims.
Lois, could you please get those figures for us, if I may, Mr. Chair?
Certainly.
Excuse me?
Could you get those figures to us? I just wasn't able to write them all down.
Absolutely.
That would be terrific.
And actually, I will send you, if it's all right to keep it paperless, I'll send you the link. It's from our data book from 2010.
Terrific. May I follow up?
Yes, please.
So, Lois, reading the law, it says, requires members of the Sensitive Review Committee, of which I've been a member several times, to develop findings and conclusions and make recommendations to the Director of Human Services regarding policies and practices, and requires the disclosure of the report to members of the Legislative Assembly upon request, unless exempt from disclosure under public record laws. So tell us about those exemptions, please.
Chair Tomei, I don't know off the top of my head what all the particular prohibitions of disclosure are. However, I know that if there's a criminal investigation pending or something of that sort, that we would not be able to disclose at that point in time. I can get clarity for the committee, if you like, around the various things under the public records law that would prevent disclosure.
I would appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Can I follow up?
Please do.
Thank you. So, help me understand, Lois. So, as I mentioned, I've been a part of of several sensitive review committees. But say I'm not, and somebody, Representative Thompson, is. But I hear he's been on this sensitive review committee, and I want to know what's going on there. I can just request that information from you. Is that right?
Representative Tomei, the actual report itself would have to be requested, I think, during the time that the committee's in process. It's confidential until it's concluded and the report is released. At that point, I believe what this bill is intending is that anyone in the legislature could request a copy of that report and the findings and recommendations that are contained in there.
Follow up? So, is that public information? If I get that, can I tell other people about it? Can I have it printed in the Clackamas Review?
Representative Tomei, let me think for a minute. I'm not able to answer that question right now,
okay.
But I can get that information for you today.
Okay, that would be great. Thank you. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Chair.
Good question. Representative Greenlink, we'll, of course.
It sounds like in the ballpark. It looks like it's two different years.
And we'll give you that. When it comes to us, we'll make sure everybody gets in the committee. But it sort of gets to that, your question, I think.
Could somebody explain where this bill came from and why anybody thinks we need this?
It was sponsored by Senators Ferrioli and Cruz.
I know. I saw the sponsors. I still have this wonder where this bill came from and why anybody thinks we need it.
My understanding from the department is that this is a technical fix, and it's a clarification of existing practice. In my conversation with Mickey Cerise from the Department of Human Services, and that they worked on the amendments on the Senate side with Senator Ferrioli, and these reflect DHS's wishes to fix a technical concern.
Oh, is this a DHS request, or is it that the amendments, is this a bill you're requesting?
Co-chairs, Representative Greenlake, this is not the department's bill. This is Senator Ferrioli's bill. We did have a lot of conversation with the senator around the bill, and we offered some amendments for clarity. It's my understanding that this is to really make clearer the role the committee has in the report writing and set a time frame for that report writing.
And you may want to take that up with Ferrielli offline, but I also would be happy if we move to a possible work session to ask the sponsors to come.
Yeah, I mean, I think if we're going to move to a work session, we ought to understand what this is about and why it's here.
I agree. Noted, and I will make sure we ask the person who knows if the representative
somebody
agreed anything.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I feel very concerned reading this, having worked with the agency that preceded Children and Families, then it was called Children's Services. There's so much sensitive material in these reports that I'm just really concerned that it would be shared inappropriately. So I'm concerned about this piece of legislation.
Good. I appreciate that. Anybody else? Representative Harker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It looks like the main amendments were centered around the sensitivity of the information and put in place the sentence about things being exempt from disclosure under 192, RS 192.
So maybe we can get more information from Lois regarding that. I just think that the more information is shared, that it becomes less and less protected as it is shared among people. So.
All right. It sounds like we've got some work to do.
I'd be happy to talk to the representatives on our side, Krieger and Chuckler, on this. So try to chase some of that down with them as well. And
talk to, sorry, representatives.
I said I'd be happy to talk to Representatives Krieger and Chaffer. They're on this bill so as well, besides the senators. So
good.
I'd be happy to try and
I know they're
that
all very busy,
well,
but it's
too.
Odd. No one's here in the room.
Yeah.
Great. I'm going to close the public hearing then on Senate Bill 746A. Thank you, Lois, for your help
today.
And I'll open the public hearing on our last bill, Senate Bill 748A, and call on Jennifer once again.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 748A requires persons conducting child abuse investigations or making protective order determination to have a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree from an accredited institution of higher learning. It exempts current DHS employees and law enforcement officials. It has a no revenue or fiscal statement issued. It passed out of the Senate Health Care Human Services Rural Health Policy Committee unanimously and passed off of the Senate floor unanimously.
Another unanimous bill sent to us. No one's here to talk about it, and I'm open to any comments or questions before we move on.
Does this have a fiscal, did you say?
It does not have a... A fiscal statement was issued indicating there would be no fiscal impact to the agency.
Hiring higher-level people doesn't cost
anything? Hold on just a second. Go ahead, Representative Greenlee.
Excuse me.
No, you have a whole follow-up? No?
No, I just wonder if, I mean, theoretically, you're hiring higher-level employees. That's what I assume it's about. And consequently, I assume it costs more. But maybe the agency...
My understanding, again, from speaking with Mickey Cerisa of the Department of Human Services, this has been DHS's current practice for 6+ years is to hire people with these degrees, and that's one of the reasons it wouldn't have a fiscal impact. This is current practice for them.
And therefore, we have a measure Y?
If it's current practice. Now, Representative Parker, did you have a comment? No, Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I see what they're trying to do here, but I almost think the people that are going out and investigating should be a parent of 4 children or something like that and had to raise 4 children in their house and go through all their different life cycles to understand what's going on in a house, because
just because somebody has a doctorate, if they've never had a kid or never been married, they don't know what's happening in a home. So I think that's something that should be probably looking at, and maybe an amendment we should add to it so they have this degree and have to be a married parent as well. So that way they've been through everything that a family member goes through with your children and puberty and everything, because you children have different life cycles that they go through and act differently.
Did we have communication with the chief sponsors of either one of the bills, 748 or 746?
Yeah, the same one.
My understanding, from speaking with Mr. Cerise, is that I didn't have conversation, but only with the department, and the department indicated that they had worked in conjunction with Senators Farioli and Cruz relative to these bills.
We shall communicate with them. Other comments? Okay, then I'm going to close the public hearing on 748A, and I'll remind the committee, with Chair Clemente's help, that we are going on another field trip Wednesday.
Correct.
And it's once again, for some inexplicable reason, at 8 a.m., and we will be...
At the right time?
8:15, technically.
Oh, 8:15.
We're telling him 8, so maybe he'll be on time.
Yes, it is 8.
And it will be, the details for that one will be on your email.
Today.
Mm-hmm. And Representative Harker is bringing coffee that morning.
All right, thank you.
So that's pretty nice. Any other comments?
Probably will have a cup of coffee with me.
So, colleagues, I really appreciate you coming today for this packed schedule, but I do appreciate your presence. And with that,
Mr. Chair,
just a minute. Representative Tomei?
I asked you, Mr. Chair. Jennifer, so our schedule, then we have another meeting scheduled for next Monday.
We do, Madam Chair. We have a informational meeting on the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program.
Okay.
And that meeting will begin at 9 a.m. on Monday the 23rd. I'll send out reminder relative to that. And we will be posting an agenda for the 25th for possible work sessions on the three bills that we just heard today.
Okay, good. Thank you.
And, you know, just a comment, it seems to me that if a health care committee could practice the efficiencies that we have, that they wouldn't have so many meetings and bills left over.
But the problem is we just keep passing bills until you can't do in this committee. It just makes it awkward if we just insist on passing legislation.
And with that, I will adjourn the House Committee on Human Services. Thank you.